It's Chasing the Yield for July 26, 2021. My name is Kevin Bay, and I'm here to talk about things that happened during the last week in my portfolio. So how's everybody doing? It's me. I've got a fresh cup of coffee. I'm short one dog. He decided not to come back upstairs, so I don't know where he's at. Hopefully he doesn't go scratching at the door. Let's see. I also tried to cool down the room while I'm doing this, so I don't start sweating profusely. Hopefully none of that ever shows up. Anyway, this is episode number 14 of Chasing the Yield. And that's just a reminder that this is a value for value podcast. If you're listening to this on a podcasting 2.0 compatible app, you can hear chapter here. You can have access to transcripts and access to chapter images and chapter links. Those are posted after the episode, shortly after the episode gets uploaded and is available. The transcript's usually available fairly quick, in an hour or so. Chapters maybe later the same day, possibly the next day. But that's where, if I have any graphics or charts or anything like that that I'm talking about, I try to put those there so you could see exactly what I'm talking about. So today seems like things are pretty stable today. Wall Street Journal, market's kind of flat, which is good. I always like the weekend because you never have to worry about anything goofy happening to your portfolios. Market's closed, so nothing bad can happen. Nothing good can happen, but nothing bad can happen, so it's a stable thing. So in the past week, ExxonMobil, they named a new CFO. Article in the Wall Street Journal said ExxonMobil Corp has hired Catherine McKells as its new chief financial officer, succeeding 43-year company veteran Andrew Swiger as the company's top financial executive. Ms. McKells will take over as the energy giant CFO August 9th, the company said. She previously served as CFO of Diageo PLC, a British beverage company. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, since 2015. Before that, Ms. McKells did stints as the CFO of Xerox, Automatic Data Processing, ADP, and United Airlines Holding. The market dip that we had last week, on July 19th. How big was that dip? I didn't even put that in the article here. But it was a drop. I think it was, what did it end up being? Something like 700 points or something like that. 1 point some odd percent. And I think it's important, you know, people look at that and you see that one day dip and they start to panic. And it really, that is not, you know, especially with the stock market so high, you know, a tiny 1% dip doesn't really mean anything. It's at 35 today. The Dow Jones is at 35,075. The NASDAQ is at 14,831 and the S&P is at 4,415. So, you know, since it's up so high, you know, 1%, it doesn't mean an awful lot. You know, 30 years ago, a 700-point drop and people would be jumping out of windows. But, you know, right now, it's not that big a deal. So there really is no reason to panic on these things. Well, I should cut over to my Tim Pool format here. I like to call this Tim Pooling it. Let me get rid of this. I forgot to get rid of the favorites bar because it's always in the way. Okay, so you can see from this chart here, if you started in 2016, let's say, you know, you bought an index fund at this point in 2016, that is somewhere between, I don't have the exact number there, but it's somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000. This is a chart for the Dow. And even with the dip that happened the other day, you know, still up at 35,000 and 34,000 something at the time. So, you know, the important part is look at it, and, you know, especially you shouldn't, be in this, at least if you're doing what I'm doing, you shouldn't be in this for the short term. You're in this for the long haul. And so, you know, you're going to hold. You're going to hold regardless of what is happening in the market. You know, the purpose is to buy stocks in solid companies that pay you a percentage, you know, a certain percentage in dividends for you funding their company. And, you know, if the company is a sound company, you know, solid in operations, you know, then regardless of the dip, you know, there could be, you know, cuts in dividends when the economy gets super bad, you know, or even cuts in dividends, something happens in the industry that company's part of. But the idea is that you still retain the asset of the stock, and that, you know, during, as long as you hold during better economic times, you know, the stock price comes back up and, you know, the dividend either returns or grows. But, you know, what I was trying to point out here is that, you know, a small, simple, you know, tiny dip, you know, it really wasn't that much. And if you look at if you started way back in the year 2000, you know, 21 years ago, given the rapid rise, especially from about 2010 all the way up to present, I mean, you would be sitting, you know, golden, even with a giant drop. You know, even if it dropped, you know, 10%, even if the market dropped 10%, you would still be way up over where you were 20 years ago. So it's not a reason to panic. It's a little blip, and not a correction. IBM saw its biggest revenue gain in 3 years. In the Wall Street Journal, they reported the top line increase of 3.4%. IBM's biggest gain in 3 years comes as the company's undergoing extensive changes, including the planned spinoff of some of its legacy IT activities that remain a multi-billion-dollar business. Revenue in the second quarter rose $18.75 billion, driven by its cloud software and services business. The company reported adjusted earnings of $2.33 a share. A consensus of analysts expected sales of $18.29 billion and adjusted earnings of $2.31 a share, according to FactSet. So IBM, IBM is extremely boring, but they're very solid. And, you know, I don't think their dividends are crazy, crazy high. What is IBM's, IBM, what is their current yield? More company research. Oh, they're not bad. I thought they were lower than this, but their current dividend yield is 4.6%. So, you know, if you're holding, you know, $10,000 worth in IBM stock, you're going to do way better with their dividend payout than you will in a savings account, certainly at, well, what, 0.5%? So, Johnson & Johnson, they posted a higher profit. The new, this is also, most of my articles come from the Wall Street Journal because I subscribe and I read it. And, you know, that's how I watch all these companies. The New Brunswick, New Jersey-based company logged sales of $23.31 billion, a 27% increase year over year, and adjusted earnings of $2.48 a share. Wall Street analysts had forecast adjusted earnings of $2.29 a share and revenue of $22.49 billion, according to FactSet survey. Johnson & Johnson, no surprise, is doing well during the pandemic times with the vaccine, even with all the problems with the lawsuits. Inflation raised its ugly head again, and it seems to continue to weigh on companies and consumers. And, you know, I'm trying to hold the line on my thinking that it's transitory, and right now what we're experiencing is temporary because of artificial economic problems caused by government shutdowns. So, you know, but with the continued news that keeps coming out and the amount of money the U.S. government's pumping into the system, I'm starting to lean towards this being a more permanent problem a little bit earlier than what, you know, I had thought. You know, I'm just a regular guy reading the news. So I'm not an expert on any of this, obviously, but you know, I've been alive for 54 years, so I've seen some of this stuff come and go. From the Wall Street Journal, they reported, in an environment where inflation continues to rise, excuse me, my throat's getting dry already, continues to rise quarter after quarter, there are certain sticking points within our ability to push it through, said Fastenal Finance Chief Holden Lewis. Inflation in the marketplace can rise at a much more methodical and smooth pace than our ability to change prices can. ConAgra, which makes Bird's Eye frozen vegetables and Slim Jim meat snacks, among hundreds of other food products, couldn't raise prices enough in the most recent quarter to make up for its own rising costs, including for cooking oils, packaging, and transportation. It expects price increases and other measures to offset its costs later this year, and said it might need to raise prices further. We still think our product's price points have room to move north based on the quality that we offer. And this is part of the problem, or part of what I see here, is that the executives of these large corporations, they've been inching prices higher, and they see that they're not getting much resistance from consumers. And I think part of that problem is because there's so much money being pumped into the system. All the child tax credits started getting paid, and there's been different news reports about, you know, families saying, yeah, we're grateful to get this money and we're able to buy this and buy that. So, you know, things I guess that they need, like school supplies and things that are starting to, you know, school season's almost here. So demand has not dropped off. Demand has stayed the same or increased, and supplies, there's still supply problems. And with all this money pumped into the system, it's going to get even worse. And with large corporations not worried about rising prices, they're able to raise their prices without having any problems with consumers. That's going to be trouble. Let me continue here. Let's see. We still think our product's price points have room to move north based on the quality that we offer, Chief Executive Sean Connolly told investors last week, noting that widespread increases across grocery aisles seem to leave consumers more willing to pay so far. You don't generally get a customer to accept inflation-justified pricing until they're confident it's not transitory, he said. How hard companies continue to push to raise prices and how well they succeed is at the heart of the current concern about inflation. The more companies succeed, the more traction in price inflation is likely to gain, keeping prices high and rising. If the price increases falter, inflation is likely to ease as labor and supply shortages diminish and the pandemic's economic effects recede. So we'll see where all that goes. And part of the inflation picture is the median existing home price rose 23.4% in June. Limited inventory still having a big effect. In the subdivision which I live in, houses don't stay on the market more than a week or two before they're sold. There's two houses that we have here that are just down the street. One is like two houses, three houses down, and one is like a block over. Both of them had offers within 2 weeks of them putting it on the market. The houses haven't closed yet, but you know, that's just the process of getting financing. Out of the Wall Street Journal, existing home sales rose 1.4% in June from the prior month to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 5.86 million. The National Association of Realtors said Thursday, June sales rose 22.9% from a year earlier. The median existing home price rose $363,300 in June, up 23.4% from a year earlier, setting a record high, extending steady price increases amid limited inventory. So that is definitely a problem here. Let's see, I'm looking at my YouTube stream here. I screwed up. I'm not recording on my podcast rig, and I forgot to hit record in Audacity, and I forgot to hit record in my my video switcher here. So the only place I'm recording right now is on YouTube. So hopefully, you know, I can download that and extract the audio and post that as a podcast episode. Hopefully the sound quality is good in YouTube. Right in the middle of that last story, I realized I didn't hit record. You know, I wonder how many times everybody's done that. So if I wasn't live streaming right now to YouTube, I would have nothing, and I'd have to start over. So when I thought everything was getting more smooth, I had everything at the beginning going and prepared, and then I forget to hit record. Lordy, lordy. Okay, Brookfield Property Partners, they announced results of a unit holder election and privatization transaction. So this is an MLP. I believe they're an MLP. Brookfield Asset Management acquired Brookfield Property Partners. Because the names are the same, it always confuses me. So I own Brookfield Property Partners, and they already were 60% owned, I think, by Brookfield Asset Management. So how this is going to affect me, this is one of the things that are brand new to me. And I don't recall receiving any notification that there was an election that I needed to make. So I'm not exactly sure how this is going to affect me just yet. So unless I did something and I forgot about it, but, you know, months ago, before I started podcasting. So and that's part of the reason why I'm doing this, to help cement some of these things in my brain. So based on unit holder elections together with the amounts owing to holders of shares of Brookfield Property, it's a REIT, not an MLP, sorry, an aggregate of 51,971,192 units were elected for cash. 271,358,615 units were elected for Brookfield Asset Management shares. And 17,970,971 units were elected for Brookfield Property Partner preferred units. As holders elected, or were deemed to have elected, to receive more BAM shares than there were available under the transaction, unit holders that elected to receive BAM shares will receive 54.5316% of the aggregate BAM shares they elected to receive, and the balance will be delivered 93.05% in cash and 6.95% in BPY preferred units. Accordingly, any holders who made an election to receive 100% of their consideration in one of the three available options will receive, respectively per BPY unit, 100% cash selection gets $18.17 in cash, 100% BAM shares election approximately $7.69 in cash, 0.2185 BAM shares, and 0.0230 BPY preferred units, or 100% BPY preferred units election, 0.7268 BPY preferred units. So I'm not exactly sure what all this stuff means just yet, and I'm not exactly sure how this affects me, and I'll find out within, the closing of this is supposed to be today. BAM and BPY anticipate that the transaction will close on July 26th, subject to the satisfaction of certain closing conditions customary in a transaction of this nature. So we'll find out what happens to me and my portfolio later on in the week. So we covered the news, update on the portfolio. As of last Friday, my low yield portfolio was up for the week 0.55%. For the month, it was still down 0.34%. For the year, up 14.14%. My medium yield portfolio is up 0.07%. For the month, it was down 1.62%. For the year, it's up 11.25%. My high yield portfolio, that one was down last week, 0.11%. Was down for the month, 2.16%. And up for the year so far, 0.15%. And that one, to note, I didn't start that portfolio, I think, until March or April. I have to go back and look. Dividends received this week, throat is getting awfully dry. Dividends received this week from First of Long Island, $48.02. John Wiley & Sons, $84.77. So it was a slow week in payouts. Dividend news, Shell Midstream Partners announced its next distribution of 30 cents per unit. This was a 35% decrease from their first quarter. So that is my first MLP that had a drastic distribution cut. I am also down on that particular stock. I think it was like 9% or something like that. So overall, it's been down quite a bit. But I think even with a 35% decrease, not to see where that is, you know, I may have to reevaluate to see what the yield is after that. I may have to switch, but we'll find out. Community Bank announced its next dividend of 43 cents per share, a 2.4% increase over their previous payout of 42 cents. First Source Corporation announced its next dividend of 31 cents per share, a 3.3% increase over the company's previous payout of 30 cents. The rest are dividends announced, and they are all in line with the company's previous payout. Johnson & Johnson announced its next dividend of $1.06 per share. Cross America Partners announced its next distribution of 52.5 cents per share. Albemarle announced its dividend of 39 cents per share. Omega Healthcare Investors announced its next dividend of 67 cents per share. One Oak, or O-N-E-O-K, I'm not even sure how you're supposed to say that. Their dividend, next dividend, is 93.5 cents per share. That sounds not correct, but maybe it is. Let me check here. Let's see. Let me check on that really quick, if I can get to it quick. Of course, when I need to find it, I can't find it right away. Let's see. Okay, dividend news here. Yeah, I knew that was wrong. 93.5 cents per share. Let me fix that. Fixing it on the fly. See, I put 93.5 cents, which is correct, but not correct. 0.935. Okay, that's better. Cents per share. In line with the company's previous payout. Sunoco, their next dividend of 45 cents per share. And that's it for this week. As a reminder, this is a podcasting 2.0 compatible podcast. That means if you're listening to the podcast on a podcasting 2.0 compatible app, you can see, you have access to transcripts, and you'll have access to chapters and chapter images that accompany each episode. Please go to newpodcastapps.com to download and support the independent apps, and go to podcastindex.org to support podcasting 2.0. They are fighting the good fight to keep podcasting free and open to independent podcasters. They also just accomplished this past week cross-app commenting. So they're trying to work on something where if you're listening to this podcast on, say, Podcast Addict, and they enable it, and then you're listening to this podcast on PodFriend, which is already enabled because that was where the first message was sent from, you'll be able to comment on the same podcast, and other listeners using other apps will be able to join in the conversation. So it's not quite chat, but cross-app commenting is a huge leap, and it's something that you won't find on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify. You know, this most podcasts are not listened to on those platforms. It's on independent apps, and you will be able to communicate with other listeners of like interests. This is also a value for value podcast, and I have a short list of value for value podcast apps at the bottom: PodFriend, PodStation, the Breeze app, and CurioCaster. You can use those apps to stream Satoshis, which is a fraction of a Bitcoin, to me or any other value for value podcast. I have a link to the value for value model, which you can click on and to get more information. It's not very difficult. You can you download one of these apps, or you can use like PodFriend. You can use this on the web using a web app, and using something like the Cash App or Strike. You can you convert regular money, so you can take like $20 and put that in your Cash App and buy Bitcoin. You know, whatever the current rate is, you'll get so many what they call Satoshis, which is a tiny fraction of a Bitcoin. Then you can easily, by scanning a QR code or copying and pasting the QR code into one of the apps, move those Satoshis over to the app. And then while you're listening, you can set the app to say, okay, I will stream that podcaster 50 Satoshis a minute. You know, you can set it to whatever you want on most of these apps. And then if you hear something you like or information that entertains you, you can do what's called a boost, where you hit the little boost button and you can set that too. You can set it to 500, 1,000, 2,000, whatever it is that you like. And really what you end up doing is paying for the content that you're consuming at the rate that you value it. As a disclaimer, ChasingTheYield.com and myself, Kevin Bay, I'm not a registered investment advisor, broker, or dealer. I may have positions in any financial instrument, product, or company mentioned on the website or on this podcast. Information provided by me or on the website is provided for information, entertainment purposes only, and are not intended as advice or recommendation or an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security or financial instruments. All opinions are based on sources believed to be accurate at the time and are provided in good faith. No warranty, representation, or guarantee expressed or implied is made as to the accuracy of the information contained herein. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. Please contact an investment professional if you have any questions regarding an investment. Also, if you have any questions for me, feel free to drop me a line at mail@chasingtheyield.com or on Twitter. You can send me a direct message or tweet at me at my handle is yield. Oh, geez, what is my stupid handle? Hold on one sec. You know, I should put this in on my blog post so I can remember it. But let's see, at yield_chasing. So that's my Twitter handle there. And let's see, I think that brings things to a close. That's it. We've run out of material. Every week presents a new challenge and new stuff happens. We all, I'm sure, will panic over something this coming week. But that's it for this Monday. Have a good week, and I'll talk to you next time. It was rough finding out I didn't hit record. Hopefully all the sound is good on YouTube, otherwise I gotta do this all over.